This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Reports of improper teacher-student relationships in Texas have increased dramatically in the past 8 years, reaching a high of 222 in 2016. That is an astonishing number. We're talking this afternoon with the TEA, Texas Education Agency's Director of Investigations, Doug Phillips, who checks into these events. So, Investigator Phillips, welcome to The Source.
Thank you.
That's a lot of incidents of improper student-teacher relationships, 222. Are all of those, are we looking at sexual relationships? Is that what we're talking about here?
No, we're talking about inappropriate relationships. So you can have something as low down on the scale, I suppose, as, you know, trying to establish a dating relationship. The ones, I guess, that are the most innocuous when you look at it from the outside are the just, we know that an educator is having multiple texting situations with a student. We see that those texts are being exchanged at all hours of the day and the night, and there's numerous texts, but we have no idea what the content is. Nobody will tell us what the content is.
But there are those that have physical contact.
Oh, yes. Yes, quite a few.
We've seen an 80% increase in these types of relationships since 2008. Is it because we're finding more, they were always out there, or are there more of them?
Well, I think they've always been out there. I think hopefully reporting is getting better, but it's my feeling that the use of, you know, electronic media, social media, being able to text, everybody has their own phone, I think that's contributing to the growth in this in a substantial way.
With social media, texting, Facebook, Snapchat, all of these things, they do leave a digital trail.
Yes, they do, which is helpful.
Now, if you can't get to the phones, how is that helpful?
Well, it's helpful when we're able to get to them, but there's also a lot of times when we can't. Phones mysteriously break, phones disappear, children or the parents won't let us access that information or won't let the police access any information. But as opposed to back in the old days when there was no trail a lot of times, at least there is an electronic trail for us to follow and for law enforcement to follow.
Isn't there a subpoena power? Haven't y'all been granted a subpoena power?
No. The subpoena power for us, all at this point it covers is basically subpoenaing records from school districts. But we do not have any power as far as obtaining any sort of electronic records. We basically have to ask for them from parents of the children is usually our best bet, or the school district if they happen to get their hands on them during their investigation or law enforcement.
I mean, it sounds like we have an epidemic, and it seems like there are all sorts of actions that could be taken that could shore this up, but that are not being taken.
I would agree with you that there are actions that could be taken that would certainly help us address these concerns and these situations.
So what would be on your wish list? What do you want to be able to do that you can't do now?
Well, there's some statutes that need to be clarified. There's a statute that requires superintendents to report this and other misconduct by educators that needs to be cleaned up a little and to make it easier for districts to understand what they need to report. I'd like to see that reporting requirement that's restricted right now, just to superintendents, broadened to include principals at least. So we shift a little bit of the burden down to the campus level in some of the larger districts. We need to have our subpoena language bolstered a little bit because we're meeting some roadblocks in getting cooperation at this point out of school districts. I think we need to have the legislature require training to encourage educators to be aware of the situation, and not only the ones that are potential wrongdoers, but for educators around them to know what to look for so that we can head these things off earlier. I would like to see a requirement that require school districts to have a social and electronic media policy. I'm a big believer in there's no reason for an educator to have one-on-one contact with a student via texting or telephone unless another person is included in that message, whether it be a principal or a parent or somebody like that. because I think that's where a lot of these things have their nexus. The way the law reads now, it's not against the law as far as the description of the penal code for inappropriate relationship between a student and educator. If that student and educator are at different school districts, we'd like to see that cleaned up and just say if you're an educator, you can't have an inappropriate relationship with a student, period. I'd like to see the fact that once you're a registered sex offender, you're no longer a certified educator in the state of Texas.
That sex offender issue that you brought up is, I'm astonished that that's not already there.
It's not. It doesn't mean that you are automatically revoked. Only if you're convicted. Only if there's a conviction and you're required to register as a sex offender are you automatically revoked. If you get it from a means other than conviction, deferred adjudication or something like that, we have to come and get it from you.
You talked about expanding reporting requirements. So that leads me to think that there are some school districts that have inappropriate teacher-student relationships that they still sweep under the rug, cover up. They don't inform the TEA about what's going on.
We believe that that's true.
Even though we're seeing these record numbers now of the and this increase, this spike of 80% increase of improper student-teacher relationships since 2008, there's still more out there not being reported.
Oh, yeah. I could pretty much guarantee you that that's the case.
We're speaking with the TEA Director of Investigations, Doug Phillips. He is at the point looking at improper student-teacher relationships and across Texas, and we're seeing this astonishing spike in them over the last 8 years. And you say that because of social media, this is happening, that because But don't the teachers know that this is out of bounds, that they shouldn't be involved in this type of thing?
We know for a fact that they know because we have seen over the last several years several different incidents where the text messages between the educator and the student go back and forth where an educator will say, hey, I was just reading in the paper where Texas leads the nation in inappropriate student relationships, and the female student says, yeah, I saw that too, and then the next response from the teacher is, so let's make sure we keep this hush-hush. We've seen a couple, two, three, four of those where we have the evidence in the text where they discuss that they understand that this is a problem. They know about it, but it's not stopping them.
So you said just there that Texas leads the nation in these types of affairs?
And there's been several news articles over the last couple of years saying that. I would tell you, I believe that the way this information's tracked, it's really difficult to say that that's true or not true. We do have the most teachers in the country. So if you look at it by percentage, you know, it's not really fair to judge Texas by Idaho standards, for example. You know, we have so many more teachers than Idaho has, but we certainly have our fair share.
But we have a huge state that you have to cover as the lead investigator in this area, but you have no travel budget.
No travel budget.
That tells me that this is not a problem that is taken seriously.
I just know we haven't had a travel budget for quite some time.
What would you do with the travel budget?
That's a good question. I guess in those cases where we felt it was necessary to go on site to interview people, we'd be able to. But frankly, with seven investigators trying to cover the state, we have 1,110 open investigations, which, you know, encompasses all the misconduct. We wouldn't be able to spend much time out of the office anyhow. Fortunately, we're able to conduct our investigations following up on school investigations and law enforcement investigations, CPS investigations, and we require that the educator come to us for their interviews. It ties our hands to a degree, but practically speaking, the size of Texas and as many cases as we're talking about, I don't know how much we could travel.
All of your investigators are in Austin?
Yes.
How often do accusations and investigations result in criminal prosecution?
I don't really. Now, so understand we don't do criminal prosecution. We're just doing civil prosecution. So criminal prosecution, I'm not real sure. I would say just if we're talking solely about inappropriate relationships, from what we see, I would just guess, and this is a wild guess, that about 50% of those or less result in any sort of charges being filed.
Do you have cooperation with the criminal investigators who are pursuing these affairs?
Good question. We have. It helps if we know the police department. For instance, we have some really good luck with the Houston Police Department. And it kind of comes down to the individual case. If we get a detective or an officer that's willing to talk to us, we're always happy about that. There's nothing that requires them to cooperate with us, per se. So we have to do a lot of calling and kind of depending on the kindness of strangers, as it were, to help us with our investigations.
So what is the impact on the students? Do we consider the students, regardless of what the circumstances are, if it's a male student, female student, that they are victims?
Yes, absolutely. And that's one of the first things that I always try to remind when I do quite a bit of talking to schools, to school personnel, and always remind them we're here about kids, and that's what this is about first and foremost, is protecting kids. Because it really does impact their lives. I mean, we've seen it where kids have committed suicide over it. We've seen it where educators are committing suicide over these things. We've had so many victims tell us, yeah, you know, at the time I was 16, I was 17, I thought I was in love with this person, and, you know, a year later I find out I was just another in a long string, and it's messed me up, and I've had to have counseling. It has an impact. Sometimes we have to argue with folks that should know better that it doesn't impact these kids. Whether you're 18 or 17, or you're still a kid, and you've got that unfair balance between the child and the teacher. There's a power relationship that's on the side of the teacher in these things.
Doug Phillips is the Texas Education Agency's Director of Investigations. He looks at the improper teacher-student relationships across the state. We're seeing a 8-year high. Investigator Phillips, thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, you're welcome.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're continuing our exploration about the epidemic of improper student-teacher relationships in Texas. In the last 8 years, the number of investigated relationships has spiked to 80%. Questions are being asked. Does the state of Texas take this problem seriously enough? What needs to be done to catch these relationships before they lead to sexual contact? How do we get school districts to comply with expanded reporting requirements? And we're now joined by Rick Garcia, an attorney who has successfully sued school districts in Texas over improper student-teacher relationships. He's with the law firm Ochoa Garcia Law Firm in McAllen, Texas. Our phone lines are open. If you've got a question or a comment about this, give us a call, 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet us at @tprsource. So, Rick Garcia, welcome to The Source.
Well, thank you, David.
Well, when do you get involved in a situation like this? When do a lawyer like you, I know that you were part of a successful lawsuit against South San Antonio ISD, and you won $4.5 million in damages from a federal jury, right?
That's correct, which is right now up on appeal at the Fifth Circuit, and we're waiting for a decision right now.
Okay, so when do you get involved?
Well, I get involved typically after there has been, an outcry. There's been the parent has found out about what has occurred by way of an improper relationship between an educator and a student, and they come and let me know what has occurred. And so we then investigate to see how high up the chain, so to speak, that this goes, and whether or not we can comply with the federal requirements in making a case against the school district.
This case with the South San Antonio Independent School District was particularly egregious. The victim was a third grader when the molestation began at the hands of the Price Elementary School principal. And it lasted for years until he turned 18?
It lasted for 3 years.
Okay.
Concerning this child, and it went on for approximately three times a week. The principal would come, get the child, have the child. If you would spend lunch or the PE period in his office with him, and then that's where the abuse would occur, at his office. And this went on for approximately 3 years. And then it was later on that after the child, this occurred, and then it came to light, there was a criminal prosecution. The principal was criminally prosecuted there in San Antonio, received an 18-year sentence. And once all that, had occurred and, come to fruition, then the family and he reached out to an attorney, and we got brought in to handle that case.
So we're talking about, that the state of Texas needs to take these things seriously because, of course, the toll that this takes on the students. But obviously this is expensive for the state as well. If you were able to get an award of $4.5 million in damages against South San Antonio Independent School District, that's a lot of money. And then there are a lot of these cases out there as well. I know you have two more on your plate, one in Donna ISD and one in Harlingen ISD.
Yes. I mean, your previous guest said, it's an epidemic. And what occurs, let me just share with you, yes, we do have the award, but realize that this is up on appeal, and we haven't seen 1 cent, nor has the victim seen 1 cent of this award at this point in time. So the fight continues, but it takes its toll, not only on the victim, but also on the educator, like the one involving in Harlingen. The educator committed suicide in that case, and our case continues against the district. And it also has an effect on the district. Hopefully, it's a positive effect in the sense that they will, adhere to their goals, which is to protect the students from this kind of conduct. But what we find often is that it's more of a protection concerning the educator than the child. And so our role and our job is to find out exactly what occurred and what did the district know and why did they fail to report this to the authorities or to CPS so that there could be an investigation.
Let me get a caller in on the conversation, 210-614-8980. And Dr. Ruth is on the line. Dr. Ruth, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you so much. I love listening to the program. I catch it as often as I can.
Thank you.
Just had one quick comment. I think this is such an important topic. I'm a psychologist in the San Antonio area, and I have extensive expertise helping or treating children that have been sexually abused. And I think the language that we use is very important. So as much as I understand, in talking about it, to try not to use the word affairs or relationships because they're not that. This is an adult, male and or female, preying on a young student. So it's important to be able to use that language because when we hear the word affair or relationship, we think it's consensual. And these, as much as a teenager might say, yes, I wanted this, or this is something that is important to me, that's still a child, and that's still an adult, and the adult is preying on the child. So I just wanted to say that, and I'll take my, anything off the air. Thank you.
All right, Dr. Ruth, thank you for calling in. So, Rick Garcia, we have to make sure that we're always aware that no matter what the circumstances, that the student is the victim, that they're really not able to join in a consensual relationship.
Yes, that as you look into these cases and you investigate them, all districts, if you will, in this state have a zero tolerance policy. In other words, one incident of this occurring between an educator and student is too much. And Dr. Ruth was correct in what she stated is that also the law is that a student can never consent to being sexually abused or harassed by an adult, and they cannot consent to agreeing to receive inappropriate text from an educator either.
So, Rick, when you do bring your cases, I guess you have to show that there's some level of neglect and at the school district level, or at least, or maybe with the TEA, and if we show that there are measures that are out there that they could adopt to try to shore these up and catch them before they get too severe, that they don't take on these measures, that they allow such a lax oversight over their teachers and students, does that increase the likelihood that they're going to have another one of these major multi-million dollar awards and damages?
I think that there are going to be other awards, if you will, in other cases, and they're going to come, and it's going to be a while, because what's occurring in these cases is that the policies and the procedures to try to protect and guidelines trying to protect the students exist. The problem is that they're not being enforced. And so what our role is always is to come in and, you know, look and determine whether or not the district itself knew. And the law is that in order to impose liability on the district, you have to show that they were consciously indifferent to the rights and welfare of students. Conscious indifference means that they had actual knowledge of the wrongful act, in other words, the abuse, and that was by a person who they, and it's termed an appropriate person. An appropriate person is someone who has the power and the authority to implement school policy and also repudiate it and to stop this bad conduct. Well, typically that appropriate person is the assistant principal or principal and goes up from there. And so you have to be able to show, it's not enough to show that a teacher was suspicious or she knew. Of course, they need to report it, but it, you have to show hands down that the appropriate person had received, information concerning this conduct, that there was an investigation. And then in light of the investigation, if you will, they turned a blind eye to it. They actually, were willfully blind to what was occurring before them, and and this occurred. And that's exactly what we had happen.
It seems to be happening all over the state of Texas as we see these incredible numbers. Rick Garcia is an attorney, successfully sued school districts in Texas over improper student-teacher relationships. The source continues after this NPR news break. We're going to talk about San Antonio Pets Live. Stay tuned.